improved welfare protocols. This is a contact sport with injury risk related to physical contact, primarily in the tackle. There was a high proportion of injuries over the period 2015 to 2019. Of them are common injuries, cuts, bruises, and dehydration. Confirmed severe injuries included 2 confirmed concussions, 3 major surgeries, with 2017 to 2018 recording the highest match injury incidents. The response, coming soon to be on the try line, the premier of first responders, the caretakers. What's up, Ruggers? Welcome back to Beyond the Tryline. This is episode 4, The Fracture. I'm your host, Unte Anderson, and I'm joined today by Lady Ruggers Brooke, Ashley Jarrett, and Tiana Gordon. Welcome, ladies.
Hi. Hello.
So today, we are taking a look at their introduction to the game and creating awareness towards improved welfare practices for Lady Ruggers. Before we jump straight into that, ladies, we are going to just have a little warm-up. So I'm going to ask you a few questions, and you guys are going to provide me the answer to those. What does the acronym WR stands for?
World Rugby.
World Rugby. What is really World Rugby?
So that is basically, I believe it's just an organization that holds every country or any country that participates in rugby on like an international level.
Okay, so they are really the organizers of the sport. So they are the international accredited body that really govern the sport of rugby.
Yeah.
When is the ball considered to be in touch?
That is when it has crossed the goal or touchline on the ground and when the referee stops the game.
Whoa, that one was very clean. That sounds like someone is a budding referee, or they are going to become some match official. A referee carries along 7 things with them. Name them for me.
Whistle.
Coin.
Watch.
Notebook.
Pencil.
Ball.
And colored cards.
Whoa, that's good. Describe a drop kick.
Alright, so that's like a ball that hits the ground, then it's kicked. So it's basically the definition. It's actual meaning. It's just there. A ball that it hits the ground and it's good. That's it.
Alright. Perfect. What's the weight of a rugby ball?
The weight of a rugby ball is usually like 410 to 460 grams.
Ah, definitely. List 4 things that are not allowed in rugby.
Punching, first of all.
Biting.
High tackles. Definitely.
And leaving a game without respecting the other opponents.
Perfect. That's nice. Tiana, how was it that you got introduced to the sport?
Okay, so I was introduced to the sport by a player. She came around asking if I was interested in rugby at Georgie's, and I was like, I have nothing to do, so why not? And I was new term of school, so I was like, I need to immerse myself in something. So that's easy, nothing at all. I was like, I'll probably do research in the night, but I'm committed right now. So
that's lovely. And for you, Brooke Ashley, how was it
for me?
The sport.
For me, actually, I was beside Tiana when that teammate came to her, and she literally told the teammate to just write down my name as well. And I just said, okay.
No questions asked. You guys just come out and just say that you are going to participate in rugby.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whoa. What you love the most about playing the sport?
For me, I think I love the adrenaline of it. I just feel like when I hit the field, I go into this alter ego that I never knew I had. And that is just the most surpassed feeling that someone can feel, or that I can feel, really. So I think that's really the best feeling, just having my teammates around and just having that adrenaline rush. And they even push my adrenaline rush sometimes. So that makes it even more exciting for me.
Wonderful. And for you, Tiana?
Yeah, it's kind of the same in the sense that the adrenaline rush is really high for me. I really love the camaraderie with players that we have, the relationship that we build with our teammates, and to have great communication with them, it just makes the sport even enjoyable.
Wow. I really, really appreciate that you guys would share that. How long have you been playing, ladies?
January made 3 years since that teammate came to us, and we've been playing since then.
Whoa. So that's January of 2018?
Yes.
Okay. And what has that journey been like for you so far?
Wow, I don't think there is one word that can exactly describe our journey. Because, I mean, from the first couple months we were even asked to try out for the national team, it definitely has been one for the books, I would say.
It was, in my mind, I'm thinking eventful. Nothing surprising. It's like every day it's like not the same thing.
Something has to happen. For me, I would describe it like a roller coaster. Like there are ups, there are downs, but you're still enjoying the ride.
And you're still coming back again.
I'm still committed, no matter what.
So tell me what's maybe the most memorable moment you would have shared over the last 3 years playing the sport, from just the high school or the pre-university level coming over into university now?
Me, I would say it's either between Sabina Park or actually winning our first schoolgirl match against our, I guess, most hard opponent that we have played, which was Jonathan Grant.
That was a big accomplishment. Jonathan Grant and I think it's Norman Manley would have had the best female teams when you guys just started playing the sport.
And pretty,
they would have had a very speedy group, and you guys were as athletic as them. So I can understand why it is that would have been one of your most memorable moments. And when you made reference to Sabina Park, it would have been the Thundercats Sevens that would have been
in 2019.
Seniors National back in 2019, where that was the first time that rugby was being really played, sevens really being played at Sabina Park. That was really a memorable tournament. What made it memorable for you guys, though?
Honestly, in my view, it was to have, it kind of mirrors an international setting. So even though it's the stadium and having persons there to watch us, we're enjoying the game and we'll be able to win, lose, tackle, everything that we do. We're like, wow, we're stepping up from schoolgirl to basically king in our stadium. everything is just like, it shows that we're building every step of the way. So that was like
And I think for me, that would have been most of the listeners' experience locally. That tournament and many other tournaments, sevens tournaments that would have been there because of the organizers' input. So for example, the Mona Titan 7, the CB 7s,
the Sunsplash Sevens, as well as the Jacob Thompson Sevens. Those Sevens would have been the premier events for the rugby calendar. And what you would find from those tournaments is that the organizers really invest to really give you, the participants, a different feel from just playing at the grassroots level to really showing you how it is that you can be exposed. Why it was memorable for me is that it took you guys that are coming in. I think that that would have been a booming year for female rugby for females.
Yeah, definitely.
Unstoppable. And that would have been where World Rugby itself would have been pushing female development in order to ensure that females are exposed out there in the world of sports to show that they can, or each female would be able to participate in a contact sport and provide some equity, share, or experience a sport. So that exposure by the organizers, which was CE7s in conjunction with the official governing body here for this, would have really used that tournament to really market you guys, as well as to market the sport within that tenure, to ensure that you guys were really exposed, or Jamaica would have been exposed to females becoming unstoppable in the sport or playing the sport. So it was really an expansion. Since then, we have never had another tournament like that. And that, I think, should be the blueprint of what most of our tournaments should be. It shouldn't be where we are playing these in small-scale stadiums without real exposure or accessibility, where multiple persons would be able to come out and see you guys play, because I think that that is really addition or a plus for how it is that you guys participated, because you now had an audience looking at you, and it is not just where your fellow, what I would say, ruggers would be just playing like at a rugby festival. It would really be the exposure for persons to see and your talents being showcased. No? So that is great. What was it like for you after that tournament?
Me, it felt like I was on an unimaginable high. Just like up to this day, I'll look at Tiana and be like, remember that Sevens tournament at Sabrina Park, and just the intense of the game and how structured it was and playing. I remember so many persons coming to us that day saying, wow, you guys have improved, or little things like that. That tournament was really, as you said, the highlight of our rugby experience. It's as if we really started actually playing rugby in 2019. And it, up to this day, we still will look back at it and just reminisce a bit and enjoy the moment and just enjoy the fact that we got to experience something like that in Jamaica.
And it also could, like, it kind of mentally set a bar for us to actually achieve, like, saying that even though we participated in Sabrina, we think that okay, that level, we probably can reach that and more. So our probably how we train, how we play a game, how we solve a problem, it made us have a different mindset in how we approach rugby.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that when I asked you that question, I was expecting for you guys to tell me Mexico. You would have been to Mexico. You guys would have been the runner-up in 2018. I think that that would have been your major accomplishment in terms of playing the sport, just starting a couple months and then going to Mexico under altitude to be really perform and come away. And you guys were new to the program at that time. What I would really think that would be your most memorable moment. But I'm not going to dive into that now, because I have another episode that we will speak to as it relates to that. Just journeying with you guys on that experience? What was Mexico City like for you? What was the tournament breakdown like for you? What were your expectations? What were your most memorable moments while you would have been at that tournament? But as I said to you, we're going to hold that for our next episode, because this episode is just really focusing on you guys being introduced to the game and how it is that we can improve welfare practices associated with the sport for you in the female context. Are you guys involved in any other aspect of the game? Whether it is officiating, whether it is administrative, are you guys involved in any other aspect of the game?
For both of us, actually, we both have our coaching certification in level one. We did that January of 2019. 2019.
Yeah.
It was January of 2019.
Any officiating pathway that you guys would have considered?
Officiating, like becoming a referee, but it's still just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't really branched out into a plan as it. It's just a thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think that is something that you guys should really explore, though. The reason for it is that it will allow you guys to think big, think different from what it is that you would have been experiencing as players or even managers. It would allow for you to really develop or blossom into the sport, into different pathways. So that is something that you should really think about. You guys would have made reference to doing your level one coaching certification in 15s. How did you guys use that?
For me, it made me understand the game a little bit more. It made me understand certain aspects of certain teams. Like, for example, there's one team that their strength is just strictly running. You know, they have the fastest runners and they use that to their advantage as much as they can. It also allowed me to realize that I do love teaching this sport. So therefore, I actually started coaching the NITES team 2019 to 2020. And that has been a great experience for me. And I do intend on continuing that and probably furthering my education in coaching.
Yeah, that is really amazing. One of the things that I would have looked at when you started coaching back at St. George's College with the females, I look at how it is that you dealt with the females, the girls there, and some of the things that I couldn't provide to you guys while coaching you, I see where you would have bridged that gap with them, especially the last group that would have been there. And that for me would have been a joy, just seeing you coaching them in the afternoons or taking them on tournaments and seeing how it is that you would have developed with them. I remember a couple of our conversations that we would have had where you would have said to me, you are not sure how it is that if you are doing well or you are not doing well. I think that is something that I wouldn't want for you to be focusing on now. I know that we can give you more feedback in terms of how it is that you're progressing on a tactical level, but just use the experience now in coaching those females to really learn as much as you can about the sport and coaching females, because I think that there is not much of any female coaches that are coaching females in the local context, and that should be where you guys can now be the next generation of coaches that impact that. For you, Tiana, I know that you wouldn't have really taken up the coaching pathway in a serious way, and I wouldn't want to say to you, take it up in a serious way, but I will challenge you to say, same way like how you would have had Brooke coaching with the NITES, at George's, I would be desirous to see whether or not it is that both of you would be coaching them when sports resume outside of the pandemic, or even for you to find another school or contact the organizers and see how best it is that you could get involved with a school. So it allow for the female game to really explode a little bit or evolve a little bit quicker with female coaches and you guys being managers and you guys being owners and you guys being the sole drive or boss to deal with the female development, especially the next generation. Because there's some things that male coaches will not be able to handle as effective as you anytime soon in the local context, and you guys experiencing the grassroots level, coming through, knowing what were some of your challenges just getting in terms of player welfare, in terms of how it is that your parents would have related to you, I think that that would be an asset for both of you in terms of moving forward once we would have re-engaged with the sports and or the sports and you guys go out and start coaching. All right, so that is something that I really want to challenge both of you to really create that support around each other, whether or not it is that you're coaching at St. George's College or you're coaching at another institution, but just try to get involved as much as possible so that you can allow other females to experience some of the things that you would have had.
Yeah. All right.
So the next question that I will ask, do you guys have any pre-game rituals that you do before games?
I always take a good nap before I enter or go on that field. I'm listening to music and take a nice nap. So when I enter that field, or when I go on that field and that whistle blow, I am fresh, I am ready, I am not tired, so that my mind is just like clear. So I don't have like, and my music is not like things that build up my anger or anything. I just want to take a good nap, so I'm clear. That's legit all I do every time I have a match.
Create that mindset to take on the game.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay, okay. And for you, Brooke?
For me, I can say I'm the complete opposite. Like, for me, it takes a good while before I can fall asleep. And I always wake up before my alarms for match days. And when I am on my way to the match or the tournament or the bus, you can guarantee that my music is some anger, some dance hall, something that just seems like I am ready to fight someone.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
Yes, it gives me that rush. It's just, I have to, if I'm not pumped, I really can't play.
Okay, so that's just like your mood in terms of switching on to play the sport.
Yeah.
For me, generally, I can't tell you that I had a pre-game ritual. When I usually play the sport, it's more just warming up and going through the paces to get ready. And I think that would have come over from my athletic years, doing athletics, where it takes anywhere between 40 minutes for me to get warm to an hour. So I normally just use that as my routine. And if the coach would have had a warm-up routine for us, I would normally try to engage my warm-up routine or my ritual leading up to that, just to ensure that I would have that mindset going into the game. So it is not bad that you guys would have had that ritual that you would have just explained. And don't feel bad of how it is that you feel going into your ritual, because your ritual, whether or not it is that you're listening to a particular music in order to just raise your adrenaline, that is part of sports in totality. So whether it is rugby, a contact sport, or it is even swimming, some persons just need that rush to basically get them engaged. And it's a process that we normally call from coaching Ignite And that is just to ignite your energies, whether it is physically and mentally, so that it gets you prepared for the game. So that's why I really ask you that question, to really just put into perspective for female listeners that might be listening, to wonder why it is that they would need to have a ritual or to prepare mentally in terms of going into a game, whether it is a contact game, a contact sport, or a non-contact sport. You just really need to take yourself through that process. And as new participants to the game, for females, I think it is more them trying to find these things out, because this is not something that I would have coached you guys, but I think that it needs to be a little bit more deliberate in coaching programs, how it is that females really engage or light up for tournaments or light up for games. So that's why I really ask you that question. All right?
Okay.
Have you ever had any serious injuries? So hold that thought for me. Welcome back. So we'll start back with you, Brooke. Have you ever had any serious injuries?
I actually had one early 2020, and that was spraining my wrist at a tournament at Warner Sports Complex. It was a sevens tournament, and to this day, I am not sure what I did. I just knew that when my adrenaline started to just die down a bit, I felt something in my wrist and I started staring at it. And the more I stared at it, the more the pain kept coming. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, should I be concerned? And at first I was like, nah, you know, you always said that you must really be concerned if you can't move your fingers. And that's when I tried to move my fingers and realized that they weren't moving.
Right.
And I then started to panic. So,
and how is it that situation was dealt with?
That situation, it was dealt with, I was took to Andrews Memorial Hospital to get an x-ray done. They actually said it wasn't fractured. So I guess it was just a really bad sprain, which I still don't understand to this day. I'm pretty sure it was fractured. It felt fractured. It felt like there was more
pain.
Something did break. Something happened. Something happened. But it was dealt with okay. I got the necessary meds that they gave me, necessary medications. I got painkillers. And they said that if something does not feel right, they'll come back again. But they said the x-ray was clear, so I shouldn't really have any problem. It was just probably a bad sprain, and with sprains, you know, they always come back. So it was really hard to work with in rugby, seeing that it is my wrist, and majority of my movements are going to be done with my wrist.
Okay. And for you, Tiana?
Yeah, I had two serious injuries. One where I was actually playing a game, and I basically, as the whistle blew, I'm basically out. That's honestly, it's just that when I got tackled, I don't know if the story might be I hit my face on the ground or somebody kneed me in the face, but all I know, they were like saying that blood, I'm like, what, where's the blood? And then they're like, look,
it's you,
it's me. And I'm like, me? And then I looked down and I saw the blood dripping on my shirt, and then it was actually me and my face. I have a scar basically on the top of my cheek, or basically on my cheekbone, like that was,
you know,
dripping.
that was like a boxer's slit,
right?
I'm correct, it would have been a game at Jonathan Grant.
Yes,
a game at Jonathan Grant or Spanish Town High at the time. And when I think it was down to surface, I was watching the game, and I honestly can't tell that there was any contact.
Yeah.
by a player, the only thing that I could recall is that based on you going down on the surface because of the system that you guys were playing as well, that time you guys were just really exploding into going forward and setting the rock. You guys were really they just blow the whistle because the blood was just running. And the time was hot, so you'll find that the blood would be off your exploration stage to dealing with rocking, dealing with the breakdown, because it's one of the most critical components in playing the game. And I recall when the whistle, as soon as you caught the ball, I remembered you just taking the ball up straight up the middle, where you gain about 5-6 yards, and then the referee, as soon as the others came over to set up that breakdown, that rock, basically, you're going, you just warm up, you just go through your paces, so again, your body ignite and you're ready to play.
Yeah.
That for me, it was
I
one of...
nothing.
Yeah, you wouldn't have felt anything. In fact, I remember cleaning off the wound, because the game when I came across to just look at the wound, I realized immediately that it was a boxer's slit and it is really a superficial wound. And my concern at the time was that anything that is a superficial wound, one, it is going to mess with your beauty, and that is maybe one of the things as a coach that I normally grapple with when females are normally playing the sport, especially on bad surfaces. If it's a good surface, I can understand. But when you're on bad surfaces, I think that I'm just putting you at risk to play a particular way. And that was one of the reasons why when you guys went out and play on poor surfaces, you normally ask me why it is that my energy levels are not really up. Like when you guys would be playing on good surfaces where I know that you would be able to explode and play the sport to the best of your ability. So that for me was really scary, because I now started to think how it is that you would look, let's say 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, when you would have significant other, and that significant other, you get up every morning looking in the mirror and seeing a scar in your face to say you get this from the sport. So that was the line of thinking that was there. So when I would have taken you off the field and start to dress it, I realized that you would definitely need stitches in order not to leave that scar. How, just walk me through that. How was that for you when I just said to you,
I think that's when it actually hit me, in the sense that, oh, this is actually that serious, because I can't really see, I never saw how it looked, so in my mind I thought it was like it cut, but it just bleeds a lot. But then when you're like, yeah, this is probably have to go get stitches, I'm like, come again? Like, I was just on the field 5 seconds ago. What do you mean by I need stitches? So it actually hit me. And the more it hit me, and you were telling me that, yeah, this probably, it might leave a scar based on how the scar probably, it will leave a scar, but based on how it's stitched, how the person stitched it, the scar would differ, and probably on how my skin heals.
Yeah.
It might be a thick one, it probably be a bigger one, but that it really it I never really paid attention, in the sense that, and plus I wasn't really that the insecurity of that, my scar, there wasn't an insecurity about it eventually, because of how it healed it, and how the person and how the doctor actually stitched it. He tried to stitch it like a little bit under my cheekbone in a way, so it actually folds a little bit under, so it wasn't a great concern in the sense of how I would look, or if that would be like a drastic change in how my face is structured and how would I look. But when you told me that I need stitches, it was like I was on the field 5 seconds ago, the whistle just blew, how am I getting stitches?
that was some of the things that was going through my mind there, as I said to you. Really about your safety, what would be the impression for you going forward in terms of how you view the sport, how it is that you view the situation. Because when I called your mother immediately, because the protocol would have been once player injured, you call their guardian. And in calling your mother was basically on her way to come and see the game, because that was one of the discussions that you wouldn't even know that mommy was really coming, because based on the you guys giving me a permission slips, I normally just follow up with your parents to find out if they really give permission, because sometimes people will say, you know, I got permission, but necessarily it is not verified by the parent. Your mom was actually going to surprise you, because your mother told me that she, in terms of the sport, she never had a problem with you playing the sport. It's more daddy wouldn't really want you to basically be engaging in the sport. So she was actually on her way. So when I called her and said to her that when she arrives, I would need her to take you to the doctor to do a stitching, because I knew exactly that you would need a stitching, because I wouldn't want for you to have a superficial wound that would basically leave a scar in your face. Mommy was all mellow about it, you know, when she actually came, she actually took you and stuff, because we never wanted to leave the other females unattended, and it was multiple games that was there. But within my headspace, anytime players are usually injured, I really just think I shouldn't even play any more game. That was just something that I always grapple with, because I was looking at it. This happened the first play of the game. What may happen for the next couple of minutes that existed there? And I don't know if you guys noticed, for every other games that you guys had, when the game was actually to be played on any field that I deem to be not fit for playing, I would prefer to forfeit the game, still go there, still warm up, honor whatever it is that would have been there, forfeit the game, but wouldn't play once it is that I don't deem it fit. And I remember even when we went to Chedwin Park, one of the times, you guys were really upset that you really traveled. But Chedwin Park at the time was really dry, and I decided that the game that you guys need to play, I wouldn't allow you guys to play it, especially when time you guys are tired, because that's part of the thing. When you guys are tired or fatigued, you oftentimes have more injuries. So it's just some of those things that I usually take into consideration.
Yeah.
All right. Outside of match day protocol, where your parent got contacted, or you, for in your instance, Brooke, where you were taken to the hospital and you did x-rays and stuff, the whole process of injury usually takes several stages before you gradually return to play. How did you deal with the obstacles that came with the injuries, especially immobility to your hand for Brooke, and for you, Tiana, walking around with a face pad or a pad under your eye until the healing or the stitching would have actually allowed for you to remove it so that it don't get infected? So how did you deal with these obstacles, and how did you overcome it, especially for the next 7 to 14 days?
For me, actually, I didn't get to heal as properly as I wanted to, because I remember that 2 weeks after I got my injury, we were supposed to play at another tournament at Spongetown Oval or Prison Oval?
Prison Oval.
And for that tournament, I was made aware that I won't be able to play because of my injury, and I came I finally came to the acceptance of that. Finally came to the acceptance that there will be a match that I am not playing at.
That's strange.
But then we were given the wrong information about the starting time of our match. All I heard is that Young Crooks Rugby Academy females are supposed to be on the field now. And I looked at my 6 girls and knew that they weren't even warmed up. I made a decision that, okay, I am going to take one for the team. And I quickly put on a jersey. I didn't even have my actual jersey number because I actually gave it to someone that day, saying that, you know, I'm not playing, so here you go. So I had to pick up a jersey quickly, throw on something, and just run out with the girls so that they're not completely beaten, seeing as it was just 6 of them. And I remember the first tackle I made, and my hand connected with the person, then connected with the ground, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to regret this. I am going to regret this.
You know, one of the things that they said that, because I remember that day how upset I was with you, the fact that you ended up playing and that you guys would have had so many girls there. And it's just because I was dealing with the other things for the other groups that we would have had, because you wouldn't have been playing any at all. That is just something for me that is a no-no. Whether you're a male or a female, you guys have to think this way when time you're going to coaching and you're coaching females or you're coaching any participant. Do not risk a player or risk yourself to play the game when you're injured, because you might have gotten away with it, you know. It would have been better for you to cancel all the games that you would have had at that tournament and don't participate. I don't believe that less numbers playing can impact your development in any way, shape, or form. So, yes, the other girls want to play, but if one person is injured, it has severe, what I would say, implications for how it is that the sport is developed, or how other female participants would want to play the sport. So that, for me, it shouldn't have been able to enter the field any at all. And the mere fact that you would have entered the field, you would have placed yourself at risk, and you would have placed the participants at risk. And that is something that, as I said to you, you must always be reflective on as a coach now. And as a player, don't go back into playing the game same time. Gradually return. And anything that is sprained and fractured sometimes usually take anywhere between 6 weeks to 8 weeks to fully heal. You would have been around me to see when it is that I would have had my sprained thumb, which actually turned out to be a fractured thumb. And that is something that you don't know. That is coaching. And that happened to me. So imagine you playing a full-fledged contact game. What are the challenges that you may experience? But thanks for sharing that, Brooke. Just be positive on the next side to know that missing one tournament or missing a few games is not going to take much from you. For you, Tiana, how did you handle the next 7 to 14 days in terms of your injury? Turning up back to school, turning up back to church, turning up to your friends, turning up where people seen this in your face. What was it like when you go back to your classroom and people see a pad on their eye to say, oh, I have a battle scar from rugby?
All right. First of all, coach, I was kind of, honestly, the scar is very small. So it's so small. It was very small. So the size of bandaging that the doctor put on it, it was basically exaggeration. when I walk around and people are like, what happened to your face? I'm like, oh, dude, 5 seconds on the field. That's it. I'm off. And they're like, whoa, that's like, wow, to rugby, right? And I'm like, it's just regular days. It's okay. And then, and like, person do be like, are you still playing a little bit? I'm like, it it's okay, guys. It's worse. I have to basically keep justifying why I'm still in the sport every time I'm interacting with someone. And when even when I got that injury, I was supposed to be on another engagement for Cadet. And I was like, I don't think I can make it. Like, and I was like, yeah, I have an injury in my face. And that, I think that's when I kind of like, I show my face in that sense, because I was like, I have to be uniform. And basically, it's basically degrading and everything. And I'm like, I don't want to be doing this and stuff like that. So I'm like, I'm not going to, oh, I wish it was really there. And I was like, I wish I was, but I really can't right now. And they're like, is it because of whatever? I'm like, it's rugby. And they're like, so you know, just leave the sport. I'm like, I have to go justify it again why I'm not going to leave. And it's going to be okay. It's just a quick moment. I'll probably be back, but it's just a quick moment that I have to like get over. But when I actually took off that bandage off my face, I realized it was just a simple little scar. I was like, what? Why you put that big bandage on my face? Host, like, it was basically like the little part of your pinky, like the first quarter. that's how small it was, and the bandage was basically from my eye to my jaw. Yeah. And I'm like, why you did all of this? But afterwards, the healing process and everything, I had to be putting on ointments. I can't really sleep on that side of my face, so I don't want the ointment to be on the pillow and everything. So it was like, it's really an adjustment. My face kind of did some stinging thing, and it kind of hurt it here and there. But what kind of when I was going back into the game, it wasn't that bad, because I was thinking about that I wouldn't want to be in so much contact because of my face. But then it kind of, the feeling kind of, I got over that feeling, because I usually basically setting up rocks, and I forgot about that feeling when I actually started immersing myself in the game. But what really kind of, like, my face was like remembering where it all happened is when we went back to play a game at Jonathan Grant. And my face started tingling, and I was like, it's okay, sweetie. We're going to get through this. Yeah.
You know, as you said that, my reaction as a coach the day when you took off the thing, I think that was maybe one of the days that I would have been happy, because remember, at the time I was teaching about IT and digital media. That's the first thing that I would be seeing in front of me. And it would just take me back to that moment of how it is that it happened. And it was maybe one of the darkest times in coaching for me. It and Carlos Betty injury, along with Giovanni Pinto injury, that I would have really been reflective on. But when your injury would have occurred, as well as Javin, Ashley, mm-hmm. where anything to do with the face, anything to do with the head in terms of concussion, anything to do with eyes, those type of injuries normally take me to a dark place in terms of reflection. Bro, I would have been injured playing the sport, so I would have experienced different things. In terms of broken bones, broken cavicle, broken arms, broken fingers, broken legs. It is not frequent in the sport, but when it do happen, it can have lasting effects on how it is that participants may progress beyond the game. And as I said to you, teaching there and coaching there and seeing the injuries when youngsters would have come back into the space, you have to really find mechanisms in order to deal with the mental aspect of how it is that player deals with the injury. And the day that you took off the bandage and you would have been back to school the morning because you came late, I think it was digital media that you would have had, I was happy to see that when I looked at your face, I wouldn't have been able to see that you have a scar. Mm-hmm. And that would, I would have to come up, because not even the lining where the stitch would have been, I would have been able to see. And that was my first reaction when you got the injury. that anything that has to do with your face, at least you would be able to use makeup if you got it stitched. If it was something that maybe would have been bigger, where anybody wouldn't have to look in your face and say, what is that in your face? You understand?
Yeah.
That being one of the things that is there. And there's some things that we can't control in terms of injury, but in your situation, that was what was going through my mind at the time. How it is that you would have dealt with that, and how it is that you would have been in terms of getting up every morning, looking into the mirror. What was that like for you? What was your parents' reaction like for you?
Well, for my mom, she, as you said, that when she picked me up, she wasn't that like real concerned, which is very weird. It's kind of weird for my mother. So probably because she was supposed to already be there, that's why it's not that surprising. But at the same time, she kind of took it with like, she don't really talk much about like how it affected her, but like you can see it in like mannerisms and everything. So when I went to the doctor, like doctor was like asking me questions about how I got it, and she's like, and she start answering the questions, and I'm like, all right, I feel like I don't have to say anything. I feel like she already know. It seemed like I wasn't there. You can go on. And then when he's like saying, I'm going to numb your face, this might, she's like, is it going to hurt or stuff like that? I'm like, sweet, it's going to numb me. It's not gonna hurt. That's the point of numbing. So I think she was concerned, but she wasn't like be concerned about what's going to happen. But again, because of how I actually like take injuries, it's not, I don't really like dwell on it that much, even though it's still a significant adjustment. So I think because of how I basically was like, it's going to be okay, I just have to put ointments on my face, and the how I actually carried myself in conversations and how I dealt with it, I think that kind of helped her not to be focused on it and be like, we can't play about the sport again. Imagine I send you this and blah, blah, and I carry it to school, to education, and you just come back with like dents in your face and stuff like that. So I didn't think that she thought it was a...
You never sense that for her.
Yeah.
But I will definitely know though, because as opposed to do an episode with mommy, one of the things, yeah, I'm looking forward to that episode actually.
Me too.
To get her feedback in terms of what was the experience like for her when you started the sport and how it is that she took your injury. That is just like a follow-up that is there. I would have been injured, and in being injured in the sport, my mom was outright. She did not want me to necessarily play the sport from day one. She was wondering why it is that I would have moved over from athletics to come and play a full-on contact sport. And you guys have both met my mom. And my mom can be one of the harshest critics that you will find as a rugged parent. And when I see how it is that I would have played after my injury, because my injury came in the first 4 months, pretty much similar to yours, and mine was severe. It happened right before I was supposed to sit examination for CSEC or safety at the time. So you know how it is as a teacher, she would have been a teacher at the time as well, how it is that she would really view it, that I told her that I never wanted to play this sport. And that was like a whole different thing. That is for our next episode though, how it is that she reacted to that and how it is that I overcame that as a player, and how it is that it built me, and how it is that it allowed me to view player protocols within the governing bodies framework, or within just national framework for dealing with injuries for sports locally. And that's how the whole birth of you guys' emergency plan came up, because I would have looked at what I went through as a player, what it is that other players would have gone through, and how it is that I can improve that experience from both, what I would say, moral perspective as well as a legal perspective. So when your mom would have gotten the news of how it is that you got injured, I would have given her a full breakdown over the telephone conversation. It might have been just 2 minutes or 3 minutes, but I would have given her the full details. And if I would have sensed that you were in any danger, because those are the things that I normally look at, especially when you guys are playing as females. If I sense that there is danger for concussion, there is protocols that we would use to deal with that. And if I sense that there might have been any other injuries, severe injuries, where the player is not supposed to be moved, you know that we would have had our first aiders there, whether it is from the first aiders, the physios, the medical persons that we would have had with our team. Or I would have been a trained first aider, so I would know how to respond to those. So those are some of the things that I would have considered. Why I'm never normally flustered when you guys get into difficult situation, especially injuries, where I might need to report to your parents or need to take action immediately in order to get you to a medical facility. And those are normally, as I said, for the listeners, I want to just drive home those. They are not normally frequent, but they do happen. And when those do happen, it must be where you have deliberate mechanisms to really tend to, whether it is a female or a male, as they progress through the sport, because it will have long-term effects on how it is that they live life, the best quality of life, as well as the best quality for the sport. And if you notice, I would have said the first 7 days to totally critical, because the 7 to 14 days is really just a reflective period for all the parties that are involved in the injury. And based on how those situations are dealt with, it can have lasting effects. For every one of the injuries that I would have just outlined, whether it is for you, Brooke, Pinto, Ashley, or Betty, I would have seen 95% of you guys return to playing, and it is where you came back stronger. And I normally ask myself the question, did you guys got an epiphany in terms of playing the sport at a more high intensity level? Because I never saw fear from you when you came back to play. In fact, you said that you were worried about your feet, but I never experienced. You could fool me, because when you come back, I realized that you were rocking more.
That's true.
And that was almost like therapy for me to see how it is that you gradually return. But if you could recall, gradually returning to playing, you gradually return to training. So when you remove that thing from your face, the bandage from your face, I could recall I had to say to you, Tiana, you can't be going back into contact. No, it is a process. It's where you have to come back, you have to jog first. You have to then now start to pick up back playing with the ball. You have to then now move into tackling. You have to then move back into contact, or move back into contact, then go back into tackling. But
our bodies were like saying that. I feel like our bodies were saying, even though I was like, we pause right there, so Samega jump back to where I paused from and continue from there. Like, I don't think we're like saying in our minds or how we heal from an injury, we have to start over. It's like, okay, so let's pick up from where I stopped. Let's go. So
when I see you guys, man, when I see you guys come back to just the training session and you pick up back the ball, as I said, it's almost like you guys were not injured any at all. It's almost like you come back stronger. I recall when I got injured, it was in 2001, and it was right before, as I said, CXC, and then I would have made the under-16 national team at the time. I couldn't recall having any fear playing with a broken clavicle, and it was less than 6 weeks and I was back on the field. So I really understand, but it's not every player has that mindset coming back from an injury. And as I said to you, on the back end of learning the proper protocols in terms of bringing back players after injury, I would have seen where it is beneficial to you guys, because it takes a whole process. It's not just you guys playing, it's dealing with the mental aspect of recovery. You healing mentally to know that, yes, my face would have been healed or my broken clavicle would have been healed. I am going to now try to catch back match fitness or training fitness, and then move you from training fitness to an individual component in the game, like running and passing, and then moving you from that component to now inject you back into the game. Different injuries will have different protocols, because when you have concussions and stuff, you know that you can't come back anytime soon. It may be 48 hours just to know what it is. The problem is, it will then take you another 7 days to 2 weeks for another, what we would say, protocol check, just to see if you are dizzy or anything that might occur out of the norm. And it might take you up to even 21 days or even longer to really return to the sport. So I normally look at those things, especially with you guys as females. I've never had a player, that female player, that would have suffered from a concussion. But I would have seen concussion with male players. I think out of my 19 years of coaching, I would have only experienced one concussion, whether it is in the local context or the international context. And that wasn't good for me as well. That would have been, I think it's Mark Simpson, one of the years for under 19, where you would have had one of those convulsive concussions, which is really catatonic, and that is maybe one of the most serious concussions that a player could have. And it was just one of those freakish accidents. Again, those accidents really happen out of the norm. It is a small percentage that usually takes place, but we again, as players, as coaches, as administrators, persons have to just look at ways how it is to improve that for players in terms of player welfare. So thanks much, ladies, for sharing on that. We'll take a break, right? We are back, Ruggers. Now it's time for a summary of our takeaways. We'll use this opportunity to exchange practical solutions for injuries to participants, given your program constraints. Ladies, for the listeners, please share what improvements in welfare you are desirous to experience.
Okay, so one, I would think that I would hope that we have that in every game setting, that we have medical cards for each player on hand at every match, so we'll be able to know the medical history of each player, what they might be allergic to, and any prior injuries that might affect anything during the game, affect the player during the game. So that, let's say a player is injured, they're on the way to the hospital or anything like that, we're able to give a good rundown of their medical history, so that even though their parents might be on the way, they can still be treated, right? Also, I think that it'd be great to have an ambulance on call for any like serious injury into transporting the player to a hospital, because urgency is such a vital thing in taking care of an injury. So to have I think in medicine, to like, yeah, can be able to in
whatever injury that
injury they probably have while they're on the way, or probably can just start to go right this or on the ambulance. So that's like a few things that I think that's really necessary for the welfare.
Okay. So, and for you, Brooke?
To add to what Kiana said, I would say if there is a case that an ambulance isn't available, or maybe we didn't get an ambulance for that particular match, maybe you could have an emergency vehicle set for that day, so that if there is an injury, we know that that vehicle or that driver is designated or is supposed to be the one to transport an injured person safe to the hospital so that they can get the required treatment that is needed. Also, another thing that could help decrease some of these injuries is having a registered nurse at games for teams. Like, a team could probably try and get somebody registered, or just have someone on hand that maybe is experienced in the medical field so that they can have them on match days and basically just assess injuries beforehand, because maybe someone may be feeling pain and to them it's nothing. You know what I'm saying? You know what? Feel pain every match and I'm nothing. But they wouldn't know that that can probably lead to a symptom to something when they go back on the field to play our next game. So having that registered nurse can tell them that, okay, I don't advise you to play this next game because maybe that sprained ankle may become fractured if you step back on the field and probably step bad or get tackled bad. Who knows?
Yeah.
So having that registered nurse can really help maybe even lessen some injuries. In hope, maybe, and also a proper field check. Just make it be safe from early. Make sure that you see that this field is probably is not able to host such a hard contact game. Don't use it. Yeah, don't suggest it. Just don't use it. There's so many fields or open land in Jamaica. You must then find somewhere else to use, or anywhere really.
And I would have shared those experiences that you would have just had, and my views is pretty much the same. The only thing I would want to do for the listeners though now is, would you separate those improvements in the high school level from the club level? Even though they are still grassroots level, would you separate those improvements? Would you say that you would prefer it more in high school, or you'd prefer it more in club, or they have an equal weighting, and what would you place more emphasis on in the high school level versus the club level?
Honestly, coach, for health, it has to be a standard across every level. So a player that's been injured at a high school versus a high school level versus at a club level is not going to get different levels of treatment. It's an injury, it's still serious with the levels. So a standard supposed to still be kept throughout every level. So I wouldn't, there wouldn't be any changes. There can be modifications, in the sense that if you're not able to get an actual registered nurse, you're trying to make somebody become registered. And if you know that your school isn't have a proper field, you try to request a different location. So therefore you won't you just assume that injuries might come. So therefore you just have a safer environment for both teams. So the standards still have to be kept. So you still need a proper check. You still need a registered nurse, or someone who is a registered nurse, or have that level of understanding of what symptoms of injuries can lead up to. You still need an emergency vehicle, whether ambulance or somebody to be like, yeah, if anything, you still have a driver to carry somebody there. You still need a first aid kit. Everything needs to be a set standard across every level.
And I do share that view, that regardless of the high school level or the club level, I know that for high schools, they might have more resources where you have a nurse that is attached to the school. It's just really some nurses, from my experiences, may end up finishing work at 4 or 4 and the games usually last until 5 or 6. And this is something maybe from the organizer's perspective, they need to now review this, where they would know on a match day, and we're speaking to days where it's not tournaments now, because tournaments, they would have had ambulances at those tournaments, or at least majority of the tournaments. You would find that we need to now pay keener attention to how it is that those schedules might be scheduled. So there is always a registered professional from the medical field that would be able to access the venue or access the route to the nearest facility or make those arrangements in advance. So the high school level is going to be different. But for the club level is really where these games are played or facilitated, where it is really the clubs or the academies that would be responsible for this player welfare. This not supposed to happen, but it do happen. And this is something that I would want to implore any coach or club or academies, that when you have these match days, find the necessary standard or keep within the necessary standard of best practices to dealing with injuries, where you don't plan for a game without you have an emergency protocol. And that protocol must involve every aspect that will impact the welfare for the player, whether they are male or they are female. So my next question that I will ask you guys now, just to round it off, what was your typical match day emergency protocol? What did this look like, whether it is from the high school level or from the club level? So I'm going to ask you, Tiana, to take the high school level and you, Brooke, to take the academy level. So again, what was a typical match day emergency protocol? What did it look like from a high school level, and what did it look like from a club level or academy level, Brooke?
Okay, so for the high school level, so the best example I can give you is when, just like when I had my injury. So so when I had my injury, you'd be able to call my mom, so therefore the contact was available for the guardian of the teammate or the player. So you'd be able to call my mom and say, yes, I've been injured, this is the location, this is the severity of the injury, this is the plan of action, and see how best reach there. So therefore, and within that time frame, you'd be able to like ice the wound, like provide some medical attention in the meantime. So having the number of the guardian, having proper layout of the injury, be able to explain everything, because based on how information is given, it depicts how a person can receive that information. So when my mom received the information about my injury, she wasn't that concerned, because how you laid out every information, what's the injury and the course of action, it brought a sense of calmness that I was still in good hands while she's on her way here. So therefore, having the contact, having medical supplies on hand, so having that first aid kit to be able to provide Neosporin or something to basically protect the wound in the meantime for transportation. So, and also we also had a person who was our nurse to be able to assist in that as well. So having first aid contact information, and having a nurse there for us helped greatly in any medical situation.
Thanks much for sharing that, Tiana. And for you, Brooke?
For me, with the academy, we ensured that we had an emergency vehicle just in case an ambulance wouldn't be available that day. So we had at least 2 emergency vehicles ready to transport anyone that has an injury. Not only that, but we also tried to get a registered medical person, whether it was
physio. We had Alex, which was first year training.
Yeah, so we just made sure that we went the extra mile to make sure that those persons were on our match day, so that if there was an injury, we knew that our players would be in safe hands. And if the injury was major, we know that they would inform us if this person is supposed to be transported. And those persons who are the emergency vehicles, who are driving the emergency vehicles, would know that, okay, they would need to leave now and make sure that this person reached the hospital safely and is getting through, actually. Because we more than likely stay with them throughout the process until we know that they are safe. And if needs be, we'll try and transport them home or as close to home as possible as well.
Yeah. So thanks much for that, Brooke. So there you have it, listeners. You know, from the perspective of the females, that's how it is that they would have experienced it. I would say going forward on match days, we need to have protocols that are very robust in ensuring that player welfare is secured. The protocols must include, but they are not limited to, the Super Six that I will share for you now. One is that we must have a use of session emergency plans. So using session emergency plans is where you would involve who the personnel or trainers are and task them to develop these plans, just focusing on player welfare. The session plan must include, but not limited to, first aid kit, first aid trainers, and any other support personnel that might be there. Two is that we must have match day emergency plans, which includes injury database. You guys made reference to it, or the ladies made reference to it, where these protocols would allow for the groups, the respective groups and coaches, to know exactly what is prior medical history for the individuals, and those must always be kept confidential and accessible to the first aid team or the medical team that is dealing with the teams or at the tournament. Liaison to just let them know what your emergency protocol looks like. Three, develop an emergency service directory. And this directory must consist of a contact database for the parents, players, significant others, hospitals, and just let persons know that there is a game that is going on today. So if the game is at, let's say, UWE Mona Bowl, you know that the closest hospital is UWE. But is it that the persons or participants have medical cards that would allow them to be accepted at UWE? And is it that the injury that they might sustain, is it that you can delay to take them to a public space or public hospital? Or is it that they need emergency care that they would need to go to the closest hospital? Those are some of the decisions that must be taken into consideration when you are developing your directory, so that you would be able to tend to the needs of the player. The fourth thing that you must take into consideration is to ensure that multiple persons are trained in terms of first aid. It cannot, what I would say, hurt to have even players that are playing on the field to have first aid training, because they would become first responders and they will also know how to deal with situations or to preserve the area for medical persons to enter the field without it being chaotic. So try your best to see how best you can train your teams or players within your teams to basically become first aiders. So don't just leave this up to the organizers of the sport to have their medical professions on board, but actually have that first aid training, because it will enhance player welfare even in your training program. And five, engage specialization groups like registered nurse and ambulance services. Allow them to put input or give input into your emergency protocols. This will allow for us as what we would say stakeholders to feel more comfortable while the game is being played. And six is that ensure that you have a contract or provide a stipend for certified physios or medical practitioners. Find a way how to get them engaged. Find a way to strike partnerships. One way that I would have looked at doing this is to engage a medical facility before the season and ensure that the players would go to the facility to do their pre-checkups, so that that information would be available to me as well as to be available to the players, so that once they run into these injuries or we have these injuries, nobody would panic. We know exactly how to treat a particular situation. So if the person is diabetic, if the person needs a particular drug, it's not where we are panicking on the day to ensure that this player remains safe. Is where we would know, everybody in the chain would know exactly what the process will be, from the actual injury to preparing that player to move the player from the field, to preparing that player to get them in the emergency vehicle or into the ambulance, and getting them to the hospital, and what are the necessary protocols that will follow after that. I would say, as you develop or participate in any program, seek to build monitoring mechanisms to improve injury surveillance and ensure that there is an overall vigilance towards dealing with player welfare. Whether it is training, whether it is playing, we must have some set standard operating procedures that will improve player welfare, whether it is for the ladies or whether it is for male participants. Use collective fees to actually help with this welfare and improve the welfare system, so that each player would be able to play and feel safe. Provide them that reassurance. Think big, act safe, be prepared. Thank you, Brooke and Tiana, for sharing your experiences today.
No problem.
You're welcome.
There you have it, listeners. The investment in program data over the last 5 years will pave the way for the next 3 years and will exceed past investments in information management and how it is used. The forecast risk of data becoming irrelevant is real, but it is being leveraged to impact the overall welfare of how the participants in the programs are taken care of. Thank you, Ruggers, for listening to Beyond the Tryline. Stay tuned for the next episode.